You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton. Thursday marks the 20th anniversary of the demolition of the King Dome on March 26th, 2000. To look back at Seattle's iconic multi-purpose stadium, I interviewed my ESPN colleague Kevin Arnovitz about his experience working at the King Dome in the summer of 1994. Afterward, we'll re-air the classic debate between Tristan and I about whether we're nostalgic for the King Dome, inspired by Kevin's tweet saying nobody misses the stadium. All right, you know my ESPN colleague Kevin Arnovitz for his incredible features, his appearances on The Jump, frequent contributor to The Low Post. But we're here to talk today to talk about a very different segment of Kevin's career. As a vendor at the King Dome in the summer of 1994. Kevin, how did this come about?
I was at college in New York City and was determined to not be in New York City that summer, and actually wanted to take a semester off. I had some credits to play around with, and it was funny, like Seattle was just kind of I just wanted to get away. And
you can't get too much farther away within the
United States. I think that was the geographical consideration. Also the fact that, like, I mean, when you're 20 and 21 years old in 1994, Seattle had all this allure. Like, this is, you know, before Microsoft was Microsoft, before Amazon was even a thing. This is before the internet. This is a moment when, like, Cameron Crowe is writing love letters to the city with a movie like Singles, which is very generational. You imagine being like a 18 or 19 year old watching that movie. Obviously, the music was also everything at that moment. And so, to the extent that one imagines himself to be, you know, cosmopolitan, artsy minded, Eastern University kind of kid, all of a sudden, Seattle, it's like, well, where am I going to go? And the answer is, I'm going to drive my pickup truck to Seattle and just, like, basically live there for 9 months.
You know, I didn't process, you mentioned this earlier before we talked, did the podcast, that you had a pickup truck. The fact that you had a pickup truck in New York at that age seems...
No, so I had to go pick up, okay. I think, the truck. Well, actually, no, there was one year where I found a lot. I parked it for, like, $40 a month with limited in and out privileges. You got X number of tokens at this massive lot by Lincoln Tunnel. So I had the truck up there to drive back and forth from Atlanta and to kind of, and also because, gotcha, like, I was also broadcasting Columbia Lions games, but they didn't provide transport. I mean, they like reimburse you for a bus ticket, but it was like, you know, like if I call a game in Providence, you know, the Brown game, like, let's just, like, it'd be cool to have this old pickup truck and I'll just park it in New York City at Lincoln Tunnel. But I didn't, like, tool around New York City in a pickup truck.
All right, so how much planning have you done for how you're going to live in Seattle once you get there?
Right, like what am I going to do? So I always also had this fantasy of being a vendor at an MLB stadium, too, because that was also the thing. It's just, I don't know, it's just like this thing on my young bucket list. Like, I want to sell beers and fashion my own, like, style of vending. I mean, this is the dorkdom I existed in. And so I emailed, and I forget which company it was back then. It was one of, like, not one of those Aramark or, right, or big behemoth companies. And like, literally, I'm sending letters typed from a computer. I mean, there's no internet. There's no email. It's 1990. I mean, there was, I think we got our email accounts at Columbia, like, when? I think we got them in 93. No, I definitely, you know what? No, there was email, but, like, you didn't go get a job via email. It was like you wrote your friends at Bates College or, like, wherever. Like, you would, like, write your friends at other schools. I mean, that was email in 1994, and you had to use the terminal down in the lounge in the dorm. Like, it wasn't popular. Like, it was just, so I wrote a letter and it's like, hi, I'm a college student in New York. I'd like to, for your, you know, summer Mariner season, be a vendor. And they wrote me back like, okay, sure. You know, so I mean, it was also funny because, like, I don't know if I'll get it. It turns out, like, you know, if you want to be a vendor, they'll find some shifts for you. And that was it. So that was sort of the origin story. And so I got to Seattle, and, like, my second day, like, reported to the King Dome.
And you found yourself in the, you know, tutelage would probably, I'm sure, be too strong, but working with one of the legendary vendors.
All right, so this was the coolest part. just by, I think it was by sheer chance. It wasn't, I don't think they put a lot of thought in placing it. But as a vendor, at least, I don't know if it's still like this, but you had kind of a homeroom. Mm-hmm. Like around the con, the various concourses, upper deck, middle deck, whatever deck, there are every several aisles sort of a vending home base. And it's sort of like, you know, as you can imagine, you walk in, it's like all the little things you put around your neck and shoulders, the little things, and yep. Here are the peanuts. And it's kind of usually, it abutted a, you know, a concession. So like the people were putting Cokes out and whatever else and all the stuff that would be in vending. So I got placed in Rick Kaminsky's homeroom. I just call it a homeroom. I don't think anyone else called it a homeroom. I tried to make homeroom happen. It didn't happen. Like, but it was, I was in Rick Kaminsky's. And Rick Kaminsky, as you know, and I'm sure if you have Seattle listeners, like, he's the peanut guy. Like, he's the original peanut guy.
It's more like, if we have non-Seattle listeners, this is the introduction. Or if you're of a younger age, because I don't know how much that translates, you know, if you weren't around following the Mariners and the Seahawks in the 90s. His kind of fame.
I mean, you tell me more, because I mean, like, I got to know him. He was just the most jovial, friendly guy. Like, it was just, and he was so welcoming. I was kind of intimidated by the whole thing. Like, it's unlike college in the East. Like, I didn't get a lot of instruction. It was just sort of like,
just turning
he was
loose.
So nice. He was just the sweetest guy.
So my recollection is he was known for just kind of the way he would toss the peanuts long distances.
He is a guy who from two aisles over could hit. And in fact, what would happen is if you happen to be, now you all split up, but if you happen to sort of be anywhere in his vicinity, there would be fans who intentionally, I mean, yeah. It's one of those things like, you don't want Rick Kaminsky giving you the peanuts when he's in your aisle. You want him to try to make the pass from two aisles over and hit you in the hands behind the back. And it was like an old school sack. I mean, I'm forgetting whether it was like if the peanuts were truly like packed in a paper bag or if they're now like the prepackaged plastic. I want to say I kind of vaguely remember him doing them in the paper bag.
That's what I feel like,
fantasy.
Too.
And he was lovely. But yeah, that was a summer in the kingdom. What was very funny about it was, and it actually was a source of irritation, because it's hard work. Like, you're schlepping up and down aisles with, and in my case, I had to start with Cokes, which I think were very low margin. You know, it was based on seniority. And they're kind of sloshing on you, and it's heavy. But the thing that happens in 1994 is if you happen to be standing in the aisle, which is generally where you're sitting, you're going up and down, and Ken Griffey Jr. comes to bat, you will be yelled at by the nicest people in Seattle. Get out of the way! Like, sit down! What are you doing? Cokes and now? Like, it was just, like, people, like, I remember, like, and it was just to the point where I had to kind of watch the lineup, you know that if he's on deck, I gotta basically get out of the way or squat. I cannot conduct business when Ken Griffey Jr. Is coming to bat.
Everything stopped. I mean, first off, you should have had the strong cue of, as soon as you heard Hip Hop Hooray,
right,
which was his signature walk-up song. That would have told you what was happening. Are you able to follow the game at all, or were you just kind of too busy focusing on your duty?
I got to tell you, it's amazing how little you actually follow the game. And I think I was probably trying, like, you know, I was also, I'm going to call myself Tracy Flick, but I was definitely trying to achieve in this. I mean, I was a doer, and I wanted to, like, be a really good vendor, you know?
Hey, always compete.
And you also, don't forget, you work on, you work on commission. So I got, and I forget what it was, maybe 50 cents out of every Coke I got, people weren't really tipping. I mean, you get occasional tips, but the Coke folks didn't get tips. I think, like, Kaminsky would get a tip.
Yeah.
I think guys who crack beers open, but the Cokes were kind of pre-poured and watered down with a little cellophane square that was sort of adhesively put on the rim. I got to move up to, I was 21. I got like a beer on my last two visits, but then it's the summer of 1994. What happens, Kevin? I lose my job. Not because I'm a terrible vendor, because I don't think I was a terrible vendor. I think I was above replacement vendor. but the roof caved in. The roof caved in.
Well, no, not quite.
The tile. Like, it was just, I wasn't there.
Yeah,
that day, or I don't even, I think, was there, it was even a game going on?
It was during batting practice.
Okay.
I guess, I think it was about 5 o'clock.
I wasn't on that shift.
I can't, and we may have had tickets to that game, actually. That's possible. It would have been before we were down there. And they quickly realized that there's a significant issue that more ceiling tiles are likely to randomly fall without them necessarily knowing which ones are going to fall. And they're quite heavy when they're falling that distance all the way from the top of the stadium down to potentially onto seats or onto the playing field, possibly even worse. And so that is the last game that the 1994 Mariners play at the Kingdom.
No, because I remember, like, I heard about it like everybody else in Seattle, and I was living on Capitol Hill at the corner of Bellevue and Thomas, and I remember kind of calling the office, and I'm like, is this... They're like, yeah, I mean, this is it. You know, like, and Roy, they just played every game on the road that year?
Yeah, there was some talk at the time about playing games in Cheney Stadium down in Tacoma.
I was going to say Tacoma AAA. Was, I think, going to be the option.
And the Players Association was, I think, against that. So, and then who knows what would have happened. This the ceiling tiles, now I can't remember the dates, because the strike was...
Yeah, I mean,
I think it was August 12th, yeah. And the strike was the end of August, yeah. Is maybe what it was. So there was like 3 weeks that they were on the road, and they didn't have to deal with, you know, what happens down the road, because of course that season got canceled.
It was a great baseball season too. Griffey had 40 home runs. So it was like the Expos were so good that year, and that was just like one of the great pennant races, the Braves Expos of all times. That was such a shame, but it was just like, it was funny because we got into this why, because like someone was sort of. You Seattleites get like nostalgic about that place.
Not all Seattleites.
I mean,
but my brother is particularly nostalgic for the Kingdom in a way that I am is a more realist. I'm not.
No, I appreciate that from a sensory standpoint. This is not an aesthetic exercise, right? Like you're nostalgic for places when you are 8 or 10 or 11 years old. You don't care that the place you're learning baseball and loving baseball is a pit, right? Like that just doesn't factor. So I have a certain forgiveness for that. I just, but like the idea that it was that anything other than just the worst, like just a terrible idea for a venue, especially given just what Seattle is in the summer.
Yes.
I mean, I going back years later, because I only lived there in 94, but going back years later into that new park and just being like, oh yeah, on one of those perfect 78 degree cloudless dry Seattle days and just being like the fact that you would ever put baseball inside, and it was just dank. I mean, it just, everything about that place was just concrete.
Yes.
And it just, but yeah, like that was, it was being a vendor in the Kingdom, it was funny. The Ken Griffey Jr. thing is like I had to get used to it, and it just, and invariably you wanted to a certain extent, like you wanted Griffey not to have an at-bat, and like you wanted Griffey to come up in the seventh because people would hang around. Like it got to a point from a cash flow standpoint, if Griffey would come up in the sixth, at the end of the sixth, and it wasn't a close game, people would vacate.
Right.
And you wanted people hanging around so you could sell more stuff.
Right. I would say, so my defining memory of the Kingdom, I mean, I have 1,000 memories of the Kingdom, the being there for the double, like, you know, all sorts of things. But just the kind of the idea of going to a day game or, you know, an early evening game, whatever it is, when the sun is setting so late, and you walk out and it's like that movie theater experience where you have to readjust to sunlight because you've been in darkness for hours and hours. And that is why, as much as I'm nostalgic for like that era of Mariners baseball, and obviously, like you said, being a kid and just not caring about anything else but the Mariners all summer long, I do not miss the Kingdom because of that.
No, and it was great. And like, I just love that summer in Seattle. It was just... I never lived anywhere. I mean, I grew up in Atlanta, and it's just like summers are kind of unforgiving. It was just like getting out of work, because I also worked on the campaign of, at the time, King County Councilman Ron Sims.
Nice.
On his Senate race against Slade Gordon, and I got hired full time by them soon after the roof fell in, or whatever we want to say, tiles fell down, or whatever. But it was just like that experience. I just, like the botanical gardens around like Lake Washington. Is it Avenue or Boulevard? And just like riding my bike at 9 p.m. when like the air's getting cooler on a summer Seattle evening is just like it was the first city I ever really fell in love with, because Atlanta was Atlanta, and it's become a great, interesting, dynamic place. I mean, New York is New York, but it doesn't invite love so much as loyalty. Seattle, I just was like. This is like everybody should live there. And then there's this funny thing that happens
that everyone did live there.
Right. Like, do you remember it was a Newsweek magazine, or was it Time magazine cover with Michael Kinsley, who had moved Slate, which was going to be like the first real online magazine. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was a cover, and it was just something about like the cover. I forget what the headline was on the cover, but it was just sort of like, you know, like America's best kept secret is out. Like Seattle is like where you want to live. And it was the first real kind of, what my partner calls aggressively livable city. And I just frigging loved it. But yeah, the Kingdome was just a hilarious juxtaposition to the rest of, like, Seattle, where it was like everything was just, you know, the view, the light, the water, and then you have this concrete blob that is just so inhospitable for anything.
And now it's just the Mariners is a franchise and a baseball team that is the juxtaposition to everything
else.
Are
they bad now? You know, so it's funny. Like, I don't know, 10 years ago, if you and I had talked, I could name all five. I can name all four-man rotations, five-man rotations in baseball. And now, just because we do what we do, I just had to leave baseball. And I suspect as like an older guy, I'll come back to it. Like, I'll be one of those old guys who have it on the radio and like, rah, you know, like sitting around.
Yeah.
And but I just don't. Or have the Mariners been bad lately?
Well, they haven't made the playoffs since 2001.
All right. See, in 2001, I watched them in the playoffs in Tokyo.
Huh.
I was in Tokyo.
I gotta imagine that was a big deal there.
Oh my god, it was. Cause, and like, what was great is it happened in like in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
But there were bars in Tokyo where you could just go, and I was this 28-year-old kid, and like, I love that Mariners team. Like, I think a lot of people did, and I just, but so I watched a lot of that LCS in Tokyo.
And that was it. And yeah, now they are sort of rebuilding. So
they haven't made the playoffs since 2001.
Yep.
I had no idea. It's that bad.
It is that bad.
Wow. Well, yeah, vending. One day I'll maybe vend again.
Well, hopefully we'll have an NBA team in Seattle. You can come vend.
We need an NBA team in Seattle for no other reason than there are travel and geographical considerations. And I just, I don't know. I'm ready for a new city. Like, are you ready for a new? I mean, you don't travel as much as I do.
It would not be a new city for
right.
me.
Right, but I'm saying, like, I'm like for those of us who kind of just travel the league, like, I want a new tour stop. Like, mix it up a little bit. Like, I want to go to some place that I haven't been.
I think it were up to NBA writers. Seattle would have a team yesterday.
No, Adonde and I used to talk about this. Like, the Seattle-Vancouver trip in Portland was totally majestic.
All right, on that note, thanks for joining us, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
All right, can we instead look backwards?
Oh.
And something that we have planned on talking about. And that is last week, my ESPN colleague Paul Lucas, who writes the UniWatch feature on ESPN, posted about a bunch of t-shirts that talk about like non-corporate name stadiums, and including I miss a t-shirt that says I miss the Kingdome. And my good friend and also ESPN colleague Kevin Artovitz replied to this by saying nobody misses the Kingdome, a concrete pit of despair in an otherwise beautiful city. I was a vendor in the stands there in 1994, lost my job when the roof collapsed. And we both responded to this on Twitter in very different ways. So I said that I think I missed the Kingdome, but only in a Stockholm syndrome kind of sense. Your response was a little different.
I mean, to me, well, first off, I want to hear, I did not know that Kevin Artovitz even had Seattle roots.
Yeah, he spent like one summer here, I think, right after college.
Just working at the Kingdom?
I didn't know that. Like, I talked with Kevin Artovitz about his time in Seattle. I had no idea about the Kingdom aspect of it. And as I said to him on Twitter, I would love to do a podcast about this.
Yeah, we should actually make this happen, right? Can we do that on the Peltoncast? Kevin Artovitz talks about his year in Seattle.
I guess there's no reason we can't do that. Maybe we should have done that this week if we were thinking ahead more.
He was here when grunge was happening. Like, Kevin Artovitz was on the pulse of Seattle, right?
Yes.
He probably has some Harvey Danger stories. But to me, the Kingdom, which I mentioned, I have a hoodie with the Kingdom screen printed on it. Now, the thing that the tweet is probably missing is that I don't miss the Kingdom because it wasn't corporately branded, right?
Obviously.
It could have been named whatever. The reason that I miss the Kingdom is because of the memories that happened in the Kingdom.
So that is, I think, the crux of the issue here is you don't miss the physical building. The physical building was horrible. Like, there is no defending
but I do.
The Kingdom
you
as
do
a physical
miss
building.
The physical building.
I mean,
there's something that is magical about being in a situation where you're in a horrible building, but really great things happen.
Again, that's Stockholm syndrome.
No, it's not. I'm just saying,
if those things had happened in Safeco Field, they would be no better or worse.
It's not a coincidence that I basically stopped paying attention to the Mariners the second they moved to Safeco Field.
It is weird, but I think
for both of us, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we stopped paying attention to the Mariners. I remember that season. I feel like halfway through that season, because they moved mid-season, right?
They did. I mean, we went to a bunch of games the next year. We went to, like, at the start of Safeco Field, we were still pretty into the Mariners.
a bunch of games the next year? Maybe two. We went to maybe two games.
I think I went to closer to a dozen games that year.
Ugh, I definitely did not.
That was a full-on scoff.
We went to the first opening night against the Red Sox.
What happened is the Mariners got trendy. Bandwagon fans jumped on.
That's what I'm saying. Which is kind of crazy because they had Ken Griffey Jr. and Randy Johnson and Alex Rodriguez and Edgar Martinez and Jay Buhner during this time period. The Kingdome is the place where I would come home from school in 1995. I would come home from school and our dad would say, do you want to go to the Mariners game? It was like $6, $8. And I'd be like, of course. And we would go and we would sit in right field, right? Not the 300 level, in the 100 level in right field for like $8 to $10 tickets. And we would literally go there and buy the tickets at the box office. How unheard of is this now?
I mean, I'm pretty sure you can still do that for most Mariners games. I hate to break it to you. They're not selling out most
They're
games.
They're not that cheap, though.
But yes, the cheap tickets are selling out.
It's just not, it doesn't seem like a thing but that people do anymore.
This is just...
But so I would go there. We would go there to these games and see these players and that run that the Mariners had in 95, right? And all of the memorable games that we went to before then. The photo ball day for, I think, my birthday, where people threw the balls onto the field.
What a time. What a time.
I mean, there's so many amazing things
that happened. These are not...
That's why we're nostalgic for it, though.
It was miserable to, like, it was a sunny day in Seattle, which, as you know, there are not a lot of those. They almost all exclusively happen during the Mariners season. So it's this gorgeous sunny day in Seattle, and then you go inside the Kingdome. It's all dark inside.
There is no better experience than waiting in line for, like, an hour and a half before the game to get a baseball bat in the sunshine.
Everything and, you're describing.
And then coming out of that game, squinting your eyes like you're a mole person because you have forgotten that sunshine exists. Like that is what baseball is!
I think you're making my argument for me.
No!
This is Stockholm Syndrome.
No, it's not Stockholm Syndrome.
You just liked it because you didn't know any better back then.
It's because we cared about the team back then. And then they moved to Safeco Field and the team lost its personality. They lost their character.
But they might have lost their personality even in the Kingdome. It's just they became...
I don't think they
decided
have.
To...
The stadium was the personality of the team. The stadium is what tied us to the team. And when they imploded the Kingdome, they imploded my fandom of the Mariners.
Notice that you're making all these comments about the Mariners and nothing about the Seahawks, who, I hate to break it to you, also played in the Kingdome, also moved into a new stadium. Do you wish that you were attending Seahawks games at the Kingdome instead of CenturyLink Field?
100%.
This is insane. We only went to one Seahawks game ever in
the
Kingdome.
I went to more.
When?
I went to at least two Seahawks games in the Kingdome.
Dubious of this.
Me and Chris Smith went to a game.
Okay. The only other Seahawks game I attended before CenturyLink Field.
And we went to that Bengals game, right? With their 3-4 defense, which was very exciting at the time.
Very exotic back then. No, the other game I attended was a preseason game, which was played at Husky Stadium because it was the same year as the ceiling tiles fell and the Seahawks had not yet returned to the Kingdome.
God, I miss those ceiling tiles.
I feel like I still vaguely remember that day. Like, we were playing outside. I mean, obviously, like, what else would we have been doing in 1994 in the summer? And then, like, hearing that the ceiling tiles fell, and like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah, I think they postponed the game that night.
Well, they did. And then the Mariners finished the season. I mean, it was up till the strike. But, yeah, the thing is, by the way, Kevin Artovitz would have lost his job to the strike otherwise.
Yeah, Kevin Artovitz. Take that.
But they played like 20 consecutive road games to end the season and would have just kept playing road games the rest of the way.
KJR still said that they would have played in a World Series against the Expos.
I remember that.
The greatest World Series that would have ever happened. The Seahawks is different, though. Like, you don't grow up... I feel like at the time, people didn't grow up as football fans. People grew up as Mariners fans. Macklemore doesn't have a song about the Seahawks in the 90s.
That's very true. I mean, first off, people did grow up as football fans. They grew up as Husky football fans, not as Seahawks
fans. And 49er fans. It just, there wasn't the connection between the team and young people at the time in the same way that there was.
But again, that had nothing to do with the Kingdome, except for the fact that it did happen to get very loud during the 95 playoff run.
Kevin Arnett said, no one is nostalgic for the Kingdome. And I am very nostalgic for the Kingdome.
And he said, nobody misses the Kingdome. There's a difference between missing and having nostalgia for.
I still miss the Kingdome.
Because miss means you'd rather be going to games there.
I would rather be going to a Mariners game there. I'm sorry, but Safeco Field is not our stadium, right? Safeco Field is a stadium for the masses. Safeco Field is a stadium for people who want to go.
Happen in 2001 either way.
Want to go to a baseball game and not watch baseball. For people who want to go to a baseball game and play in a kids area. For people who want to go to a baseball game and sit and stitch while they're going to a baseball game.
And people who want to go to a baseball game and hang out in the center field, like
drink in the pen or whatever, right? That's not what you do at a Mariners game at the Kingdom. You go there and you sit in your fucking seats and you watch the game.
It's really, again, I feel like you're making my point for me all this time.
These are better. I'm sorry, going to Mariners games and not paying attention to the game just means you're paying for the ticket to go and drink expensive alcohol. Why do you do that? There are bars, people. Young people who go to Mariners games, go to bars instead. Bars are better in every single way than drinking at a baseball game. Why is this happening?
They have to be bars where you can be outdoors. They have to be bars with patios.
There are plenty. They can go drink at Captain Black's, at Linda's. There are plenty of places to go and drink outdoors.
At Loretta's?
Yeah, sort of, maybe. I don't know. We'll see what happens with the Loretta's patio.
No, it's there.
Okay.
I walked through it when we were there a couple weeks ago. There were people on it.
Okay. But the team lost its personality when it moved to Safeco Field. It turned from a team where it felt like it was our team, right? Like, we felt during the 90s like we owned the Mariners.
Except for the periods when we thought that they were going to move. Did you feel like that we owned the teams here?
Even more.
Do you remember,
but you remember how attached we felt to the Mariners. And when interlopers would come in, like in 95, it's like we were there all year in 95. And then all of a sudden the team got good for that brief stretch, and everybody else was paying attention. And it felt like, hey, what's going on? Why are you paying attention to our team all of a sudden?
I don't know if I was upset about that. I mean, it was cool to have, like, a home field advantage. That was fun.
There was character to the team. It's in the same way, but the character is completely gone. You don't go to Safeco Field and feel anything.
You know who
it's
actually...
It's a completely empty feeling. It is... I'm not going to say what I was going to say. But first, I want to talk about... It's the same way... How when we were Sonics season ticket holders and we had tickets initially in section 222, right?
Home of the real fans.
Yeah, in the second to last row in the end zone of the stadium, of the arena.
About as bad seats as you could possibly get.
We got to know the people around us, right? It was like a culture. Every single game that you went to was like, oh, I know this person, I know this person. You develop relationships. It's kind of the way that I feel at Seahawks games now, right? But then we got season tickets when you work there that were in like 126 or something, like pretty good seats. And we didn't know anybody. It was just a rotating cast of bankers coming through, right? In the pre-Amazon days.
How many bankers do you think were at these games?
Most of the people. But it was not the same kind of culture of people in that section. Like, I don't know the people who sat around me when I sat. And those were multiple years.
Was it because of the fact that Key Arena was such a fancy rebuild arena?
Yeah.
Coliseum had more character. Did you miss the Coliseum?
I think that happened a little bit too long ago.
It is interesting the timing of this, though, because it made me think about, like, I'm having these weird mixed feelings about Key Arena now that it's in its final months in its current incarnation, because on the one hand, like, of the places I've spent the most time in my life, Key Arena might be in the top five. I've spent a lot of time at Key Arena. And I have these great memories of times there. And at the same time, I hate Key Arena with a fiery passion.
Because there's no better place to watch a basketball game. We were at the Rose Garden, or whatever they call it, the Moda Center, 2 months ago. It is an awful place to watch a basketball game.
I mean, you were in standing room only at the back of the arena.
We had tickets in the second to last row for the Sonics. We've done standing room only. You can still see the game. You couldn't even see the game in standing room only at the Moda Center.
Yeah, it's a much bigger arena. I grant that. Key Arena is a good place to be in the 200 level watching again.
Key Arena is a good place to be.
You know what is not a good place to be?
Any seat
doing the being a media member.
Fuck the media. What's here talking about, like, what it means for the media? Oh, sorry. Sorry, sir. Come on. The media? How many media members are there, and how many people are there at the game?
I mean, some Sonics games is pretty close. I gotta be honest with you.
Oh my god. Ugh! Arguing for what it meant for the media?
I'm a member of the media! What do you want me to do here?
That's not still even then being a member of the media. That's not the way you should view it.
Your takes are bad.
You've forgotten where you came from.
I mean...
No, your 222 credit's gone! It's almost like you never sat in those seats. You're so personally offended by this.
I mean, you're going to start, are you nostalgic for the old Husky Stadium? Do you miss the urinal troughs?
Maybe I do.
Oh,
Has it become noticeably better?
Tell you, I realized how much I did not miss them when I went to Colorado and their stadium had them.
The troughs.
Oh, yeah.
Look, I want to be an extra 30 feet away from the field because there's a track around it.
On that note, thanks for listening.